Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Howdy, folks. My name is Lynn. I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And I'd like to welcome my charming co-hosts, Bobby Neer and Robert. And I also want to welcome our resident guest host, Dave Cooper. Hi there, guys.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
And I would also like to welcome today, Day Show 2011, and Kelly. So hello
Hi.
To you both. Hi, and thanks for being here. Today's episode is titled Dust, and I'll turn it over to Robert now for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
There was a village built of crumbling clay and rotting wood. And it squatted ugly under a broiling sun like a sick and mangy animal wanting to die. This village had a virus shared by its people. It was the germ of squalor, of hopelessness, of a loss of faith. For the faithless, the hopeless, the misery-laden, there is time, ample time, to engage in one of the other pursuits of men. They begin to destroy themselves.
Thank you very much, Robert. Okay, Dust takes place in a very poor and dusty Mexican village, hence the title. A young man is scheduled to hang for murder because he got drunk one night and ran down a little girl with his wagon. The sheriff is not happy about the hanging. He feels that the town is in enough despair without adding to it, but he has to do what he has to do. The young man's father comes into town to plead for his son's life, and whereby a despicable traveling peddler decides to play on the father's desperation and sells him a bag of sand for 100 pesos, claiming that it's magic dust, and if he sprinkles it over the townspeople, their hate will turn into love. So the father does just that moments before the hanging, and everyone laughs at him. The hanging goes on, but the rope breaks, and the young man's life is saved. The parents of the little girl he killed decide not to rehang him. They feel he suffered enough. The rotten peddler, who also sold the rope for the hanging, is stunned. He takes the 100 pesos the father paid him, throws them on the ground in front of some kids, and says, "There you go, take them." He can't figure out what happened since it was a brand new rope. It shouldn't have broken so easily. He thinks it might have been some divine intervention, and everybody goes home feeling okay. I gave this episode a 2.5 rating for above average. I don't know why I gave it that. I know it's only a half point difference, but I don't think it deserves anything over an average rating. I originally said in my review that I rated it that high because all of the acting was very good, and I still stand by that. John Larch is a good actor. You may remember that he also played the psychiatrist in the season one episode, Perchance to Dream, and I liked him as the sheriff. In this episode, I genuinely felt bad for him. Now, according to some articles, director Douglas Hayes wanted John Larch to play the sheriff as a very lethargic and listless character devoid of any energy to basically represent the feeling of the town as a whole. And he said that was very hard for Larch because Larch was an actor with a lot of energy. And Vladimir Sokolov, who played the role of the desperate father, he did that very convincingly. I felt bad for him as well. And Thomas Gomez was absolutely perfect as a sneaky, despicable peddler who found a very gullible victim to buy his magic dust. But my main problem with the episode was the ending. Now, I believe in forgive and forget to a certain degree. But in this case, the parents of the dead girl were too quick and too willing to just turn the other cheek. Now, do I think Luis Gallegos should have been hanged? Not really. But he was drunk, and he did drive his wagon recklessly through town at night. And he killed the little girl. Had he not been drunk and reckless, she'd probably still be alive. I don't know. I don't think he should have simply been able to walk away. He should have spent at least a reasonable amount of time in jail for what he did. To me, it's involuntary manslaughter. You know, he did kill her, whether he meant to or not, and he didn't. But, you know, I doubt I could be that forgiving if it was my child or my husband or any loved one that he killed. So that was my main problem with the story. And at the very end, everybody says, "Oh, rope broke. Okay, well, let him go. It's okay. You know, he killed the little girl, but what the hell? Let him go home." You know, so I didn't buy that part. And by the way, one of the little farmer boys in this, I think at toward the end, one of the little farmer boys in the scene was the director's son, Douglas Hayes Jr. So that's a little bit of trivia to throw out there. But, yeah, I did give it an above-average rating, but I shouldn't have because the episode wasn't that great. The acting was good, but it didn't deserve any more than an average, and that ending was just ridiculous to me, totally ridiculous. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Robert. How ridiculous did you think it was, Robert?
Well, I have my theory about how this should have ended a little differently, but before I get into that, I want to talk a little about Frontier Justice for a moment. And, you know, we got to understand that, you know, Justice in the West was whatever came behind the gun or whatever was pretty much made up. You know, we remember seeing the history, you know, the movie and reading the history of Judge Roy Bean. We know how he served his justice to people. And, you know, you have a U.S. Marshal that has given, you know, three or four territories, you know, miles apart before they can even come around. So the only law enforcement that you had during the time was the sheriff of that town. Now, depending on how brave or how cowardness or how bot the sheriff is of that town is basically how justice is presented. And even getting a judge there would take between 2 to 3 weeks, if most, before trial can even be held. So, pretty much in my review, you know, I claim it as a murder. As Lynn said, I would probably, you know, in our justice system today, we would probably look at it as involuntary manslaughter. But in the West, murder was murder. Didn't go by different various degrees of what was what.
And people so, just shot people and walked away. They got no jail time at all back in the Old West.
Yeah, if you were a hardened criminal and you were well known in that town or in territories all around, people wouldn't mess with you unless they want to try to up you. So you had a lot of gun street fights in town. I mean, their Wyatt Earp was the one that seemed to be the one that stood up for justice, but even he had his times where he got bought or had his little endeavors during that time as sheriff as well. So not everybody is a good all around good guy straight through, but I just wanted to present, you know, the Frontier Justice situation. And with this one, you know, a little girl, as Lynn said, was murdered by someone who was drunk and not paying attention and ran her over with the wagon. And so we really don't get the backstory. I don't know if we really need much of a backstory with this one because we pretty much pick up with him already in prison. Of course, we have the peddler who is freaking annoying as anything and got on the townspeople's nerves and even got on my nerve as it was when I was watching
this.
He was nasty. He was a piece of work, so to say, with him. This was pretty much, to me, a Western version of What You Need, which was season 1, episode 12. Which everybody seemed to got something that they needed out of this. Have the condemned man who gets a second chance at life. We got the sheriff who gets his beliefs somewhat back about mankind. Galileo's father got his faith back through God or magic, wherever you want to call it. The grieving couple. He did show some resistance more than his wife did, but in the story, I guess you could call it closure. I still don't see where, you know, nothing was done with that situation. I mean, even Sky got a little redemption at the end, and it was all tied up in a nice dirty bow, so to say. But how I wish this would have changed, and it kind of disappointed me in the story, was it should have been like execution in a sense of where there should have been a switch between Skykes and Galileo, where they changed places and that Skykes was hanging from the rope before the rope goes. Then they switch back, and then the rope breaks. And I put that as I would put that as the reason why he gave the gold to the kids, because he felt, or you know, he went in the shoes of the other person, and that's why. You know, that would have been a better reason of giving the gold coins to the kids, I felt, if they went along that line. But
yeah, that could have been an interesting ending.
Yeah. I pretty much also give this an average. A couple of things came to mind. One, of course, is Death Valley Days, and I mentioned that in my review. It was a radio show that went to television, ran from 1952 to 1975, had different hosts on it, and had 452 episodes. And it was produced by Gene Autry. Lewis Gregg were the executive producers of the series. One interesting one that I found was called Coffin for a Coward. And it starred DeForest Kelly. Now, as you know, DeForest Kelly played in the Star Trek series as Dr. McCoy, but he also got his start playing villains in westerns and various shows. He played in a lot of episodes in 66 of Death Valley Days. This one's called A Coffin for a Coward. Now, there's a little bit of the opening, a little surprise commercial with, I'm not going to say who, and then a clip into some scenes from the story itself. So go ahead and play it now.
We're on a Death Valley Day set and water's not handy. Lorexo Waterless Hand Cleaner really cleans up for us.
Just a dab.
Removes paint, grease, tar, carbon, ink, even plain dirt. Anytime, anywhere, without water. The whole crew swears by Lorexo Waterless, and so will you.
Well, what are you going to do about it, Sheriff? We'll talk about it in the morning. This is not the place to...
This is just the place.
Right here over Billy's grave. I swear to put the man that murdered Billy in a pine box and shove him in a hole under some rock right where he belongs. I want a pine box.
How big?
As tall as a coward.
That's today's date, Daly.
If this is some kind of a joke, mister, I don't think it's funny.
Funerals never are.
Now get in it.
You mean?
I said get in it.
Get up, Daly!
Down over you.
As we hang each one of these men, we'll fire the cannon so everyone in earshot of Aurora will hear it and be reminded of this. If we'd done something about it sooner, Billy would still be alive. We'll never forgive ourselves for what we allowed to happen here.
Basically, it's about DeForest Kelly, who in the town stands up. The town is plagued by three killers. He decides to take a stand against them, and you hear towards the end what happens to him. So, sometimes Death Valley Days had certain twists to them, and in the ad that you heard, that was Ronald Reagan. He was host from 65 to 66.
Oh, wow. I did. You know, I'm thinking, I know that voice, and I just couldn't put my finger on it.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking the same thing, too. I thought, what, there's something about that voice, but why can't I place it?
Yeah.
Well,
because he didn't talk like this.
I have
no recollection of that.
But, that's yeah, true. Sometimes they would do a little twist on the end of Death Valley Days. I remember a lot between, you know, when I was a kid. There was a host called the Old Ranger that ran from 52 to 65. Played by Stanley Andrews, that would introduce the show and also do the commercial for Braxo. After he left, that's when Reagan took over, and then after that, Robert Taylor took over, and then Dale Robson was the last host from 69 to 72. Later on, they did bring it back with some newer shows, and it was narrated by Merle Haggard. Also, when I was a kid, I used to read different types of comics, and one of them was called Jonah Hex. Jonah Hex was a man whose family was killed, and he was branded on his face. Hence gives him his mark. Something supernatural happens to him to where he's endowed with powers. And it was always one of those weird twisted tale stories that were in the comic books. I remember when I was a kid reading that. But in 2010, they came out with a movie version with Josh Brolin and Megan Fox. And here's the trailer to it.
Don't do this, Cerebles, please.
Daddy!
Don't do this, no!
This mark will remind you of the man who took everything you had. After that night, some say he was a changed man. That his spirit crossed over, giving him powers that can't be explained.
Jonah Hex.
I have coffin. Thinking you might need a...
Cut him down!
Jonah Hex.
You don't look so tough.
Hey, what happened to your face?
Cut myself shaved. What happened to yours?
Always do lock when you finally show up.
Jeez, woman, how many men you see today?
Quentin Turnbull.
You dare say that name to me?
Quentin Turnbull surfaced about a month ago.
We want Turnbull dead. Why don't you just say that to begin with? Anything new, Smith?
Thought you'd never ask. But take it that means you approve. This is the future.
Future's bright. Can you shoot?
Can you?
This war begins right here! I own you now!
That ain't much for being owned.
Turnbull!
We ain't near settled our score.
What's it like to go through life with a face like that?
I tell ya. Still got that knife in your garter?
They took it.
Still got that derringer in your bustle?
They took it all, Jonah.
Well, searched you for darn good, didn't they?
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, Megan Fox. my.
That's why you went to see that. Know that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if she would have been any better in this than in Transformers, so who knows. Yeah, but I give this a 2 out of 5. Very average. Like I said, I wish the ending of it would change to really show why he redeemed himself to give the coins to the children. So.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, I should have given it a 2, but I gave it 2.5, which is okay.
Well, I'm going to pass it over to Bobby. Bobby, what'd you think?
Hi. Thank you, Robert. Well, I'm going to agree with everybody else, even before they say it, that the ending leaves a lot to be desired and is pretty unrealistic. I think even for the Old West, it's unrealistic, frankly. I don't think that people who have a vested interest in a hanging or an execution because their loved ones were murdered, or whether it was deliberate or not, would be so easily put off and simply say, well, enough is enough. Because the death penalty, you know, aside from being the ultimate punishment, is an act of vengeance. You know, you want to get back at the person who did this terrible thing, and that's the best way you have of getting back at people, is to make them die too. There is no better way, although rotting in prison is no party either. But to get off entirely is completely ridiculous. The real problem I have with, I think it's a fairly well-done story considering that it's not much to it. It's well acted. It's got good atmosphere, as I said in my review when we did it. The actors are good. Everybody takes it seriously. But the problem I have with the story is that it has no point of view. And it makes me wonder why Rod Serling wrote it in the first place. He just write a story, like all Twilight Zone stories, to sell about this odd incident. Or was he trying to say something? I have no idea whether back then in the late 50s and early 60s he was a proponent of the death penalty or not. course, the death penalty was applied a lot easier, more often then than it is now. And whether or not he was trying to make it, give a message there, because people who oppose the death penalty believe that you're simply as bad as the person who committed the murder. You're just coming down to their level. And so because they end up letting him go, that might have been the message. Of course, there's no way to know that because Rod Serling isn't around anymore. So that's what troubles me about it. It just makes me wonder what it is he was thinking. Personally, I support the death penalty for certain crimes, not for everything, but for certain crimes. And I just, this would never be enough for me. If the parents, if I was one of the parents, he's got to go to jail, at the very least. I would have liked to have seen the ending be, I would have liked to have seen some sort of personal discussion between the accused and the parents, who might have said that, or told him deliberately, that whatever reason the rope broke, whether it's divine intervention, an accident, bad, faulty product, whatever it is, he's got a break that their child did not get. And now he's going to go to prison, and he can think about it, how he got the chance that she did not. Because that could be, if you have any feelings at all, a much worse fate. But this idiocy about simply letting him go is ridiculous. I don't believe that would have happened anywhere. Not in the West, not today, not anywhere. There would be a public outcry about that.
Not if Warren Earp was around.
Yes, well, and really? In my original review on the board, I brought up Charles Manson. And Manson and his gang are still in prison after 40 years. And, you know, they're going to die there. And that's the way it should be. Yeah, they did get the death penalty. They were overturned when the Supreme Court overturned the death penalty as it was written back then. And so along with a lot of other prisoners on death row, they got a reprieve. But it's bad enough. I've always been irritated by that. I think he should have died for it. But he is there for the rest of his life, and he's simply going to die there, and that's fine. That's all that we're really left with.
Sometimes that can be a favor.
Well, I can't imagine sitting in prison all that time. I've seen him interviewed. He's been interviewed in which he just bumps his nose at it and says he's been in prison his entire life since he was a teenager. So it doesn't mean anything to him. He grew up there. Who cares? Well, that's tough talk. But nobody wants to be in the world today where with the internet and all kinds of ways to communicate with the world, you don't want to be sitting in a prison cell. So that's a pretty bad punishment. I still would have liked to have seen him die. I still feel that way. But he will eventually. But this kind of story here, I mean, you can imagine if when the Supreme Court overturned the death penalty, they'd say, well, you know, people on death row now aren't going to die, and they get to walk out of prison. I think it would have been a public outcry. It would have been insane. So that part of the story really leaves a lot to be desired. I can't agree with that part of it at all. And I also disagree with something Robert said. Although I know it's whatever the half an hour story is, 23 minutes or whatever it is after commercials, I would have liked to have seen the actual so-called crime or accident at the beginning, just for a few minutes, because I think that
a little background. Yeah.
Well, viewers may get a more personal view when you will see it yourself. Even though you might not be able, maybe it's dark, maybe you really can't tell what's happening, you look at it and you go, hey, wait a minute, I was there. I saw this guy run over this child. I have a different point of view. When you just see him already arrested, you go, well, what's this all about? What is everybody all excited about? Why is he getting death penalty? I think it lacks a little something there, but of course it is a very short story. Like I said,
well,
you know,
I think Bobby the Peddler tried to fill some of that in when he went into the jail. But
He did.
We don't apply the death penalty that cavalierly is these days, as you pointed out. Of course, in the Old West, you get death penalty for just about anything, and you could get it within a couple of minutes. I mean, if a posse came to get you, there wasn't any trial or anything. They simply put a rope up around a tree, and that was it. You're the guy. We got you, and you're gone. History.
Hang them high.
And so that's the problem with that. Ironically enough, just yesterday, strangely enough, we're doing a story today, here in Seattle, there was an incident in which a driver – it was all over the news last night and still is, hit a 77-year-old woman who was crossing the street. And he, I don't think he even stopped. He simply kept driving. And somebody coming the other way saw it and turned around and looked back and got part of his license plate. Now, last time I heard, they're still looking for him. They may have caught him by now. I haven't seen the news today. But his car is damaged. They've got part of his license plate. He's going to be in a lot of trouble. What's interesting about it on the news last night is that the 77-year-old woman, who was apparently out late in the day by herself, was not crossing at a crosswalk. She crossed in the middle of the street. And they say that because of that, it probably, unless he was a drunk driver, and that I don't know, that had he stopped and called the police, he could have claimed it was an accident. This old lady walks out in front of him in the middle of nowhere. But because he drove away, it is now a felony. Now he's in trouble. It really doesn't matter whether she crossed the street or crossed in the middle of the street or whatever happened. Now he's
in big time
trouble.
The hit and run. Yeah, hit and run.
I mean, it was a stupid thing to do. And a guy was coming the other way. And, you know, they're bound to catch him. What are you going to do unless he leaves the country? His car is damaged and everything. He's got a lot of problems. And I thought it was kind of ironic that that would happen right on the eve of doing a story like this. So he's not going to get the death penalty when they catch him. But, you know, it's not a bad story. To tell you the truth, when I look at the synopsis of the story before watching it, I think to myself, here comes another one of those tedious Twilight Zone episodes. It's just a lot of people standing around talking. But it's a little bit better than that. It does get your emotions going. But, you know, if I could do anything, I would just want to talk to Rod Serling and say, you just wrote this story. You had a message here. You really don't support the death penalty. Who knows? I have no idea. I didn't get a chance to check on the internet to see if there's anything about his feelings about it. That's probably not there. But I gave it a 2 as well because I don't think there's anything really extraordinary about it to make anybody want to watch it. And there are lots of endings. Should have been a more take him. It's scared the hell out of you to have a rope around your neck. And actually have the feeling of being hanged only to have the rope break, that may be enough, but it's enough to send him back to jail and let him think about it. And that's what I would have done. So
I agree.
My rating is 82. Okay, bud.
Okay. All right, Dave.
I think it's good I go after Bobby because and it's not deliberate, Bobby. I genuinely do enjoy your analysis of the shows, and there are often points I do agree with. In actual fact, I expected from you today, I thought you were going to say the most interesting thing about this episode was I kept looking at that stoop-back horse. I couldn't work out what was wrong with it. And the most interesting thing was the bloody horse tied up outside the sheriff's office. And probably
well,
now
I
should
have said
it,
that.
Probably...
Can we start the show over and I'll do it this month?
Yeah. let me go. I always have a number of things that I want to say. And things that other people say always sidetrack me. You said that you wanted to talk to Sterling and say, you know, does he not believe in the death penalty, this, that, and the other? But as we've always said on Twilight Zone, he always has 2 bites of the cherry. He's done that. There's so-called execution. They didn't use the same blooming hangman's jib, and the blank was sent back in time, and he actually sent back to the hangman's noose, and justice was served. So this was, in a way, him flipping the coin and having the other side of the story, you know, where he gets off. Now, whether it's an act of God, whether it's dumb luck, or whether it's the fact that the peddler was actually selling shoddy workmanship, shoddy rope, you know, he sold it as a proper rope, but it was a cheap old one, although he seemed to deny that at the end.
He said it was a 5-amp rope or something like that.
Yeah, he was just stunned that it broke, yeah.
That was my favorite line, too.
Right. people listening to the recording later, every time one person said, I couldn't understand this, I couldn't understand that, I couldn't understand that, I kept putting in the text, magic dust. Magic dust.
I know.
If you accept the point of magic dust, every one of those points you say you can't stand is explained. They did. They let the mother of the child let him off because she'd been sprinkled with magic dust. The other people did that. Basically, the only answer is either the story's unsatisfactory because you don't believe that it could have been magic dust and it doesn't hold together, or you take it for what it was, even the cynical peddler was turned at the end. And I must admit, at first I thought it seemed a bit out of character in throwing the money on the ground. At first I thought, well, perhaps he doesn't want to accept the money because he feels as though he's been a bit slimy and whatever. Or indeed, the magic dust has affected him. But having said that, all that was not what I was going to say before I started. The thing for me was the interesting in all the different actors. And by the way, when I just mentioned the episode, The Execution, should mention that the same actor, one of the same actors was in that, John Lormer, who played a revenant in that episode. And here he just played, I think, one of the men in the actual gathering. One of the other men in the a second cowboy, I think one of the ones that spoke up, he was quite a well-known actor. Dan White, he's been in Laramie, Have Gun, Will Travel, The Rifleman, Wagon Train, Tales of Wells Fargo, Ripcord.
Who was that, Dave? Who's that you're talking about?
Dan White. I think he was the...
Oh,
you know,
okay,
when
yeah.
When they called out to the assembled crowd, he was one of the cowboys that shouted
exactly.
up. So he's been an awful lot. I'm glad that you mentioned the old chap, and where's his name's gone off the screen.
Vladimir Solikov?
Yeah, all the early year he played the old man in The Magnificent Seven. That's the old man.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that. I forgot that. That's
I watched Magnificent Seven this week, so yeah.
Yeah, he's the wise man that all the villagers go to, and they say they want their advice. And he tells them to go and buy guns. And they say, well, how can we do that? So he said, get everybody in the village to collect money. And he takes his fob watch out of his thingy and he gives that. And he says, start with that and ask everybody in the village. And then there's the famous line that Yul Brynner says when he's offered the money. He said, I've been offered a lot for my service before, but never everything. Because they collected everything in the village. The reason why I mentioned that was the part he's playing in here, the father of the man to be executed, he has to collect this 100 pesos or whatever it is. The peddler can't believe that the old man has got the money together so quickly. And he asks him how he's got it. And he says, we went all around the village and collected it, all his family. And I thought, that was a lovely mirror to The Magnificent Seven.
Seven, yeah.
I really enjoyed that. The little boy was played by the director's son.
Douglas Hayes Jr., yeah.
Yeah, but the little girl that had an equally... speaking part, I can't find who she was. I thought she was like a young Natalie Wood when I first saw her, but she wasn't credited, so I can't follow that up. And I would agree again with you, Lynn, that John Larch, the one that played the sheriff, I think they tried to make him a little bit lethargic at the beginning, because one of the things that they tried to stress at the beginning is with the horse outside the sheriff, this was a one-horse town that you couldn't even ride, this tumbleweed. When the peddler goes in, it's a baking day and people haven't got energy to even protest, never mind raise up in arms against someone. And I did feel as though the start of it was a little slow. And I'll come back to Bobby one more time. I understand what you say about it would have been nice if we'd seen... was it you? It might have been Robert. The reconstruction of the accident. At the
yeah,
beginning.
That was me. Yeah, I just wanted to be a spectator. That's all.
Yeah, but I think there was a reason they didn't do that, apart from possibly cost, was the fact that our sympathies would have been different.
Oh, that's true.
If we'd have seen what looked like a fairly clean shaven young man who looked as though 99% of the time, he was a hard working farmer,
right.
Salt of the earth farmer. If we'd had in the first scene seen him, come stumbling out of the saloon drunk and then heartlessly, wheeled down and career over there, then our sympathies would have been that we wouldn't have wanted the magic dust to work. But when we see him in that sheriff's jail looking fairly clean cut, we see actually the peddler being the despicable one taunting him. And this guy looks like somebody who just once in his life, he's fallen off the rails. Perhaps his crops dried up because of the nasty weather and that. And he's just, perhaps for once in his life, can't handle liquor and gone into the saloon and had all these tragic events happen to him.
He's probably
feeling
differently. Mm-hmm.
It looks like
the town
was on its last leg anyway from
the
scene.
Yeah, and that's why Douglas Hayes, the director, he wanted John Larch to play a very lethargic, very listless person, devoid of much energy, because he wanted him to basically represent the feeling of the town as a whole. It was a very desperate town, and it was dusty.
Yeah, it looks as though you couldn't hear anything there at all. I mean, it looked... the tail end of nowhere, really. So
everyone seemed to be like they looked like they were in despair.
Yeah, but I do believe I agree with a lot of people. I had to go when the peddler seemed to suddenly turn on a dime at the end. But the thing is, if you assume that you know, the magic dust was magic dust, then the whole thing, and then, of course, that's fantasy. But I think I'd give it a 2.5. I don't think it was a spectacular one. I'm not defending it against other people saying it was brilliant, but the point is that there was an explanation for the way the town behaved, even if that explanation is not one that people want to accept as the explanation. But, I mean, there was a possible thing that the actual dust was indeed magic just for that one episode. We are, after all, in the Twilight Zone.
That's true, Dave. All right, Kelly, do you have anything you want to add to this?
Well, yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement with all of you. I mean, I'm pretty sure I gave it an average rating as well, because as I recall, when I watched it and did my review, I didn't think there was anything that really jumped out that much at me. But the one thing that I was going to comment about John Larch and him playing the marshal there, how you were saying that they wanted him to kind of play it more lethargic. But I found that interesting because to me, he seemed pretty lively compared to everybody else in that town who seemed to all just be walking around in a trance, aside from the peddler. who was being very annoying. And I would agree, he was annoying, but by the same token, he was supposed to be annoying. He was the guy that you were supposed to hate in the story. So from that standpoint, I think he did a good job in the actor did a good job of creating that character pretty well.
Well, Douglas Hayes said that John Larch had a real hard time playing the role the way he did because he's an actor with a lot of energy, and he had a hard time having to play a listless person.
Yeah, and so I'm thinking that's probably why, probably part of it is that he's just not typically a listless guy, and so he was playing it obviously reserved, but like I said, compared to everybody else in the town, he seemed to me, he didn't seem that listless to me. He seemed to me like he did have some emotion and he did have some real feelings. And he obviously was disturbed about the hanging. I do know that back in the Old West, certainly vigilante justice was meted out a lot. And, you know, yes, you could certainly be hanged for a lot of reasons. The movie Hang 'Em High came up here, and certainly one of the big scenes in that movie is where a bunch of guys are getting hanged for, I believe, because they stole horses. And I remember Clint Eastwood's character actually tried to defend a couple of the guys, you know, to try to say they didn't deserve to be hanged because they'd never, you know, like one guy was only 17 and he'd never had any prior encounters with the law. But they weren't actually in this took place, that show took place in Oklahoma before it was actually a state. It was a territory, and things worked differently in a territory. And so because of that, it was basically cut and dry. There was, you know, horse thieving was a hanging offense, and if you were found guilty of it, there was no reprieve. You know, that was just what it is.
Well, Kelly?
And, yeah.
That movie, it starts out with him driving some cattle across, and men.
Oh, it was cattle. It was cattle.
Yeah,
thieving.
He couldn't prove.
It's been a long time since I've seen it, so they stole cattle. So yeah. I mean, horse thieving or cattle thieving. I mean, you know, basically you were stealing somebody's livelihood. So you know, certainly it's understandable why they would want the punishment to be very harsh.
Well, Eastwood character had a bill of sale, and he was trying to prove that he got it, but the guy
that he got it from
was killed. Yeah.
Right. That was early in the movie. I'm talking about later in the movie when they found like six guys who had been involved in cattle. It was either cattle thieving or horse thieving. And they,
right, when he's working for the Pat Hingle character,
exactly,
the judge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he brought them in. And then there was a trial that ensued, and Clint Eastwood tried to defend one of the guys, saying that he didn't deserve to be hanged. So it certainly justice was meted out like that. But in this case, the punishment, from my perspective, did seem kind of harsh. And Bob brought up that he was wondering what Serling's point of the story was, and I have to admit, I kind of wonder about that too, because You can kind of take away a couple of different things, because I know that back then there was a time in this country when people who were caught drunk driving pretty much got a slap on the wrist. I mean, if you killed somebody, usually not much happened to you. I mean, I know that I had a friend in college whose younger brother was killed by a drunk driver when he was a small child, and she said nothing happened to that driver because he was drunk. You know, they basically looked upon it as that you were not responsible for your actions because you were drunk. So, I mean, he could have been making a statement about that, you know, basically saying that maybe we needed more tougher laws about drunk drivers, but by the same token, did we really need to put somebody like that to death? I mean, I'm with Bob. I think somebody who runs somebody down in their car when they are under the influence of whatever definitely deserves some prison time. And I think that, you know, in many cases, they don't get enough prison time, even though there has been improvements. Certainly, I think that guy probably would have deserved more prison time. Was Rod Serling the anti-death penalty? That's hard to tell. since the guy's rope actually broke, is it a story about forgiveness? Maybe. You know, because certainly the parents, I can kind of see it, because maybe from the standpoint of looking at it like, well, he already got hanged once. Why do we have to hang him again? You know, kind of that viewpoint. I remember I saw a TV show that was set in the West a long time ago where somebody was hanged and somehow the rope broke and he got away. But then when the marshal caught up to him, he said, well, they decided that you've already been hanged once. So they don't need to do it again. Since the sentence was carried out, it's not your fault that the rope broke. It was our fault. So it was kind of that attitude. So it's just, you know, I think there's a few different themes at work here, all meshed together in one central theme. I think maybe that's why we all gave it average ratings, is because it's just kind of hard to really get the full how it all turns out at the end.
I think that was a pod crusher, was it? Can just come in there. Two things you raised there. I mean, being in the UK, I'm not sure what happens, but I mean, I always used to think that, like when they used to give electrocutions in America, if somebody survived the electrocution or something went wrong, you know, they'd. I mean, the whole point about this lad, he hadn't. First of all, he killed this child. We don't know, like, the other examples that have been talked about. He didn't try and run away from it, did he, as far as we know? I don't think the peddler said, and he ran away. So, I mean, he may have given himself up. So, again, not somebody who did something and then tried to hide it. Secondly, the fact that he had submitted himself to be hanged, it wasn't his fault that the rope had broken, so you can argue that. And the third point is to say that the Twilight Zone had already examined the opposite one with the episode Execution, where, you know, justice is served because the bloke gets sent back in time to a hanging that it looked as though he was going to get away with.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with that. Hang on, I want to try to see if Mike can get in here. Hold on. Robert, should I try to get Mike
in? Yeah, go ahead. I think... Mike, are you on now?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi,
yeah,
Mike.
We wanted to get through everybody first before we brought you on. We weren't trying to be rude or nothing. We were just trying to let Kelly finish up.
New talk to you. I wasn't too sure if you guys could hear me or not.
Mic up
a
little bit. Turn your sound up just a little bit.
He was having a hard time.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you there.
I hear you.
Yeah.
So what do you think about Dust, Mike?
I'll just listen. I'd never really heard what you guys were talking about. I'll just sit.
Okay.
Yeah, it seemed like he was having a little trouble getting in before.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks. I'm glad you stopped by. Well, okay. Does anybody else have anything to add to this one?
Nope.
Okay.
I think we did it. But hey, Lynn.
Yeah.
But before we wrap it, I just would like to say to everybody out there who's listening that if you haven't checked out our website, to please go into Yahoo TV Groups, Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed, and check us out.
Okay. Let's see, 2 weeks from now, April 9th, we are doing Back There with Russell Johnson, who is also in The Execution that Dave has been talking about. So 2 weeks from now, we'll be doing Back There, and I guess I'll see every one of you there, right?
Back There?
Yeah. Back There. We'll see everyone back here when we do Back There. Okay, folks. We'll have a great weekend, and thanks, everyone, for stopping by, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye, all.
Bye.
Bye.